You're listening to traditional drumming performed by the West African group Compagnie Dakan. It is titled Fazo Kan. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and today a very special program indeed, because we'll be reaching back to hear directly from the father of Pan-Africanism his instructions, his vision for a united African world. 2 years after a plebiscite ratified a new constitution and Usagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah was elected the first prime minister and president of the Republic of Ghana, a conference of African freedom fighters, that's what it was called, was held in the nation's capital. Nkrumah had led Ghana, formerly known as the Gold Coast, to independence from Britain in 1957. He titled his speech, Step to Freedom. The aim of the conference was to bring together freedom fighters in independent as well as still colonized states to map out strategies for a united Africa and avoid recolonization by enemies who, he warned, would not let go of the African territories they controlled through imperialist and colonialist wars and other external pressures that would keep the continent divided and economically devastated. Nkrumah, the acknowledged father of Pan-Africanism, saw African unity as a global endeavor, consolidating the power, interests, and wealth of all African nations. So we share this speech of 1962. We share this speech, a powerful and prescient address, with you today. And I want you to pay attention. I keep complaining all the time that the African world doesn't need very much more. We have all the instructions we need. We have all of the expertise that we could possibly tap into available to us. I want you to listen to this speech, keeping in mind what has happened in the African world, not just on the African continent, but in the African world, from the date of this speech in 1962 to today. Now, I want to prepare you. There are some little glitches you will hear in the speech because it's old and was not well taken care of. But we will hear him speak himself, and we can get over the little tiny glitches here and there. This is a very, very, very important speech, and everybody ought to know it. All right, so here is Dr. Kwame Nkrumah speaking to the Conference of African Freedom Fighters in Accra.
Fellow freedom fighters, comrades and friends, it is my great pleasure to welcome you to Accra and to this Conference of African Freedom Fighters and supporters of the growing movement for Africa's liberation and unity. It is good for our cause to have a periodic meeting of this kind to examine our position in the great struggle to rid Africa completely and forever of imperialism and its handmaidens, colonialism and neocolonialism. It gives us the opportunity also to review our strength as well as that of the enemy, and to reorganize our forces and our strategy in order to carry the struggle forward to victory. We have shaped a destiny for ourselves, and no one can alter the course of that destiny. It is the destiny of complete freedom for Africa, the total liberation of our continent, and its political and economic unification. We have achieved some measure of success in this struggle for human freedom and dignity. But we still have a great task ahead. We can only know the extent of our task and our own strength when we have examined and ascertained that of the enemy. Who is the enemy? Fellow freedom fighters, the enemy is imperialism. Which uses as its weapons colonialism and neo-colonialism. Let us be very, very clear about this. Let us also not lose sight of the real objective, which is the liquidation of colonialism and imperialism in all its forms, political, economic, ideological, and the political unification of Africa, our dear continent. Then we must ask, what is imperialism? And what are the forms it has taken? And what other mask is it likely to put on? Modern imperialism arose when capitalism had achieved both industrial and financial monopoly, and the competition for raw materials and markets had made it imperative for the advanced industrialized countries to expand into the less advanced parts of the world. This phenomenon led to the partition of the world among the great powers. Asia and Africa were divided up among them. Fellow freedom fighters and friends, African nationalist thinking has been adjusting to internationalism within the continent, the development process that must lead to the political unification of the African continent. But the objective of African unity can be seriously undermined by tribalism, which provides one of the happiest hunting grounds for the colonialist and new colonialist enemies of African independence and unity. Unless we take this problem of tribalism very carefully in hand, it can undo all our valiant efforts to bring real independence to Africa. We all know the evils of colonialism, but there are some of us who do not appreciate the malevolent possibilities for infinite disruption and even chaos of uncontrolled tribalism, which can make havoc of our hopes and our aspirations. We know that the colonialists are past masters in the policy of divide and rule. They are quick to seize on tribal differences which they discover among us and use this to pit one group against the other. Soon, these superficial differences become exaggerated into serious political factions, which sometimes lead to tragic fratricidal struggles within the same territory. You must guard against it. Guard against it by forging a common united front against the common enemy. The dangers it opens up and the manipulations to which it can be put are too numerous and too threatening for us to ignore it, to ignore its urgent demand for critical and constructive attention. Failure in this task would only risk all the efforts and sacrifices that we have made so far in our common cause and place in jeopardy the future peace and development of the continent. I therefore charge you to place high on your agenda and to give it your most thoughtful and creative consideration. Colonial rule has left a high degree of illiteracy among our people. And we all know that in conditions of ignorance and superstition, it is easy enough to fan internecine feuds. This menace can be met by unity among the leaders and the creation of a nationwide, firmly knit political organization receiving the most complete loyalty and devoted service from all its members, especially its officers and organizing officials in the field. Colonial rule has left the masses of our people poverty-stricken, disease-ridden, while enormous quantities of mineral and agricultural wealth were drained out of Africa year in and year out. I am not making this point merely in order to harrow you with ugly memories. Many of you have been confronted only too recently with the shocking actualities of calculated oppression to be able at this moment to push them out of your mind. I raise this point so that it will stay in your minds when you may be tempted by the seductive promises of new colonialism to forget the real character of colonialist imperialism and be persuaded away from your own true interests and those of Africa. For today, we must each see ourselves as part of Africa in order that we may face colonialist imperialism and its new form, new colonialism, on a continent-wide front. For unity must be the keynote of our actions. Our enemies are many, and they stand ready to pounce upon and exploit our very weakness. They tell us that this particular person or that particular country has greater or more favorable potentialities than the other. They do not tell us that we should unite, that we are all as good as we are able to make ourselves once we are free. Remember, always, that you have four stages to make. First, the attainment of freedom and independence. Secondly, the consolidation of that freedom and independence. Thirdly, the creation of unity and community between the free African states. Fourth, the economic and social reconstruction of Africa. I must again urge the United Nations to see to it that its own declaration on the liquidation of colonialism is given practical effect without further delay. So long as colonialism exists in Africa, Africans cannot help talking the way we do now. And mankind cannot escape the constant threat of war. Africa therefore appeals to the United Nations to live up to its reputation as the greatest bastion of world peace and demands that a meeting of this year's United Nations session should be devoted to the problem of colonialism in Africa. It is folly. It is folly for the colonialists to think that they can hold back forever the progress of history. The process of change is inherent in the interplay of social, economic, and political forces. It is true that these can be hindered and impeded and even bent to different purposes, but not forever. However, we who are concerned with the immediacy of African independence and unity are not prepared to wait upon the evolution of history. We are determined to give history a revolutionary push. We must adopt a positive, all-out anti-colonialist, anti-imperialist attack, and this quickly, for we cannot afford the luxury of delay. Time asks for the enemy, no less than for ourselves. Let us therefore examine our position seriously and objectively to see how well we have managed so far and evaluate our points of weakness and the necessary remedies. Let us determine what modifications are needed to adjust our strategy to counter the movements of the enemy and overcome him. This requires some plain speaking. And for the sake of Africa, let us speak plainly. As I see it, our greatest danger stems from disunity and the inability to see that the realization of our hopes and aspirations, the realization of our objective of total African independence, and of our future progress and prosperity is inextricably bound up with the necessity to unify our policy and actions in connection with the continuous struggle for independence and the greater task of economic and social reconstruction beyond it. We must therefore face the issue of African unity now, for only unity will make the artificial boundaries and regional demarcations imposed by colonialism obsolete and superfluous. African unity will thus provide an effective remedy for border disputes and internecine troubles. In a united Africa, there could be no frontier claims between Ethiopia and Somalia, or between Zanzibar and Kenya, Guinea or Liberia, or between Ghana, Togoland, and the Ivory Coast. Because we would regard ourselves as one great continental family of nations. Some of the leaders, it must be confessed, do not see the struggle of their brother Africans as part of their own struggle. Even if they did, they would not be free to express their solidarity. These rifts are consciously created by the imperialists between Africans, where they can sit back and watch with sly satisfaction, as well as contempt for those who fail to see how they are being used against Africa's best interests. Regrettably, those states include some who were among the freedom fighters of yesterday and who haven't won their independence, are willing to drop it for some token aid and thereby deny to those still struggling for freedom even their moral support. Here is a phenomenon against which all African freedom fighters must be on their guard and resist to the utmost. Even though I appreciate the difficulties facing us, I must admit I find it strange to watch some of us returning willingly to the colonialist fold. This time, they don't even have the excuse of being forced to subject themselves to foreign domination. It makes one wonder why so much effort and sacrifice and so many lives were given up to the achievement of independence in the first place, if it can only be so quickly and easily surrendered. Unhappily for us, colonialism creates in some intellectual allegiances which are not severed at the moment of independence, but remain to condition loyalties away from Africa towards the metropolis which draws them. They are unable, it would appear, to accept the idea that Africans can get together to make viable and going concern of a combined African continent, but rather see their salvation in coming together in association like the Franco-African community mooted recently at Bangui. although there are many here who speak English, French, Spanish, or Portuguese. Nevertheless, we are all Africans. Africans fighting for Africa's independence, Africa's unity, Africa's future. I have said that I understand the difficulties of these states, which are drawing away from the African community back into that of Europe. Faced with the demands of their people for rising standards of living and better social conditions, but charged with economies that can hardly meet the recurrent expenses of administration and maintenance, they are in dilemma. And standing at their elbows are the new colonialist agents, beckoning them back with a smile into the web of imperialism, though it may have a new look this time and offer the irresistible bait of immediate help. But this help will be far outweighed, as they will experience with no great loss of time by the knots into which their economies will be tied by the Euro-African Association. Imperialism does not change its nature. It only changes its front. It still needs colonial appendages, whether in name or in fact, to exploit and at the same time to support its Cold War strategy. In the face of this serious threat to our economy and independence in Africa, we must begin to build immediately our own continental common market. For it is easy for anyone who studies the common market organization closely to realize that the common market is aimed at harnessing the African countries to satisfy the profit lust of the imperialist bloc and to prevent us from following an independent neutralist policy. It is easy to see that the imperialists and the colonialists are determined to retain the African countries in the position of suppliers of cheap raw materials. If we do not resist this threat, and if we throw in our lot with the common market, we shall doom the economy of Africa to a state of perpetual subjection to the economy of Western Europe. This will, of course, hinder the industrialization of our young African states. It is impossible to think of economic development and national independence without possessing an unfettered capacity for maintaining a strong industrial power. The activities of the common market are therefore fraught with dangerous political and economic consequences for the independent African states. The organization constitutes an attempt to replace the old system of colonial exploitation by a new system of collective colonialism, which will be stronger and more dangerous than the old evils we are striving to liquidate from our continent. There is an alternative to Euro-African Association with these deadly implications for Africa's independence and progress. It is in an African economic community in which we can all pool our production and our trade to a common advantage. It is not difficult to imagine that the new colonialists would describe this as a pooling of poverty. It is, however, too simple a distortion of fact. Africa is rich and not poor. As the great wealth that has been taken out of our continent over five centuries of despoliation and extortion, very well put. Africa has immense actual and potential wealth: gold, diamond, copper, manganese, bauxite, iron ore, uranium, asbestos, chrome, cobalt, a host of other minerals. Our essential cultural produce have all been drained away by colonialist imperialism. Africa is far from being poor. It is Africans who are poor, not Africa. And they are poor because of the uncounted profit that has been made out of the exploitation of their labor and their lands. If we are being bidded to enter a European community, we must have something that community needs, and needs badly, when it pretends to offer a bonus by way of aid. When Greeks come bearing grapes, should we not look them well in the mouth? If I may mix my metaphor, but I'm sure you get my meaning. When we, new, untried, inexperienced states, are flattered into European alliances, we enter not as equals, but as suppliers of primary products at the generosity of industrial competitors. How generous they can be, we have learned from our sad experience over a good long time. Who fixes the prices? Who can play off one against the other by allowing the goods of associates in free of tariff and placing a tariff on others? As long as it is possible to deal with this singly, one by one, we are at the mercy of the imperialists rather than their generosity. And we shall find ourselves in the same old cleft state of receiving the lowest possible prices for our raw materials, while those of us who are obliged to buy their manufactured goods because of being members of the association will pay for them through the nose. These same states will find themselves tied up in knots, which will prevent their going into an open market for their needs of goods and capital investment. And above all, they will lose their option of non-alignment and find themselves dragged into the diplomacy of imperialist Cold War politics, which will operate against the independence and intrinsic interests of Africa. Those of us who cannot see through these implications can only be suffering from an intense myopia. Within our African community, our pooled production will place us in a position to bargain for higher prices and so secure greater revenues, out of which we can invest in our development. At the same time, we can trade freely among ourselves and buy from ourselves in the cheapest markets. We can turn for aid to those sources which will give us the most suitable terms while leaving us free to follow our own internal and external policy. But more even than this narrow cooperation, we need a wider continental economic plan which will allow us within unity, to exploit Africa's tremendous resources for our common welfare and greater African development and progress. If we are really sincere in our desire to see the end of imperialism in Africa, then, apart even from the consideration involved in African unity, we should turn away from any form of association with Europe, which, through its new colonialist control of our policies, will help rather to sustain that imperialism and undermine it. It is bad enough that our economies, as a legacy of colonial rule, are imperialist controlled, and that we have to strive every means to rid ourselves of this economic imperialism and secure our development and progress on solid African foundations. This is another reason why we should come together in a unified African economic plan, which, operating on a continental scale, can make a solid attack on the imperialist domination in Africa. We should, without delay, aim at the creation of a joint African military command. There is little wisdom in our present separate effort to build up and maintain defense forces, which, in any case, would be ineffective in a major world conflict. If we examine this problem realistically, we would ask, which single African state could protect itself against an imperialist aggressor? And how much more difficult this would be when some states are allowing the imperialists to maintain bases on their territories. I have already referred to the military forces which South Africa is raising and the danger it poses for the new African states and the struggle of those still in chains. Only our unity can provide us with anything like adequate protection. If we do not unite and combine our military forces, South Africa, along with her allies or any other colonialist imperialist power, can pick us off one by one. Not only that, some of us, out of a sense of insecurity, may be drawn into making defense pacts with imperialists, which will endanger the security of us all. It follows that if we set up in Africa a common economic planning organization and a joint military command, we shall have to work out and adopt a common foreign policy to give political direction to our continental development and our continental defense. Fellow freedom fighters, you may perhaps wonder why I have dwelt at some length with these problems of the unity of independent African states and what relevance they have to our immediate problems of how to overcome the obstacles standing in the way of your own struggle and independence as freedom fighters. I think I have answered any such questions by pointing out that the dangers to the whole subject of your fight for freedom in the fragmentary state of Africa at this present time. Moreover, the moment you have achieved your independence, you will be faced with the practical problems of protecting that independence and securing your viability in order to lay the foundations on which you build up economic and social development. You must know where you are going, what avenues of support await you, which will contribute to your real consolidation and protection amid the problems that will confront you. Those problems can best be met within a unified Africa, and it should be possible in the higher reaches of our endeavor to devise a constitutional structure which will secure the objectives I have outlined, and yet preserve the sovereignty of each of the countries joining the Union. Countries within the Union will naturally maintain their own constitutions, continue to use their own national emblems and national anthems and other symbols and paraphernalia of sovereignty. Regional associations and territorial groupings can only be other forms of balkanization unless they are conceived within the framework of a continental union. There are existing models which we can modify or adapt to our pattern. The United States of America, the Soviet Union, India and China have proved the efficacy of unions embracing large stretches of land and population. When the first 13 states of America tried to promote the idea of a United States, this was ridiculed as an empty dream and vigorously resisted by many. Today, America is the foremost industrial country in the world, and the states within her union number 50 states. And who would have thought that almost 100 different peoples of various levels of economic, social, and political development could have been welded into the mighty state which the Soviet Union has become in such space of time. Such short space of time. For example, the example of Europe, which is left in confusion after centuries of mutually destructive economic warfare and competition, because it failed to build a sound foundation for common political action and understanding, should be a lesson for us all. But with the exigencies created by the shrinking of empires, the growing socialist world, and the need generated by the greater productive capacities inherent in present-day techniques, even Europe is now beginning to seek its common association. It is paradoxical, therefore, that some African states should be turning away from their proper African affiliations to those of other continents. Rather, we should all be working ceaselessly to bring to fruition the fond hope of African unity, to which we all give lip service and to which most of us are resolutely dedicated. And now, fellow freedom fighters, let me say a few words about the sad development in what looked like hopeful moves towards the unity of the Caribbean islands. It may sound far-fetched, but it has a meaning to us as Africans. We regard West Indians as our brothers. For they have strong ties of kinship with us here in Africa. They, like us, have suffered and are still suffering the iniquities of colonial oppression. I think it's only right that we should show concern over any development which tends to undermine their solidarity and progress. And we have indeed been saddened by the failure of the attempt at federation. How can these little islands hope to stand by themselves in the future any better than they have done in the past? When the trend is towards the creation of bigger units of economic viability, it is most distressing to find that some of our brothers across the Atlantic seem to be unaware of the vital needs of the widest possible federation, drawn together by a central government with sufficient powers to make the principle of unified progress a working possibility. It would be tragic, yes, tragic, not only for the West Indians, but also for Africans and other people of African descent, if the islands in the West Indies were to remain apart. for we have reposed so much hope and faith in the emergence of the Caribbean islands as a United States, free and progressive, federated in strength and purpose, and contributing substantially to the total success of our peoples. I hope that the West Indian leaders, who are men of learning and progress, will see the folly and danger of this disuniting development and arrest the process for the good of all concerned. And that's true now. Here in Africa, the increasing activity of freedom fighters all over the continent is one of the most hopeful signs of the victory that must crown our efforts. Many have to take what is not ours. But we have a perfect right to fight for the birthright of freedom and the ownership of our land that has been filched up from us and is being illegally withheld. Inasmuch as our struggle for independence and our subsequent national and continental development is bound up with the question of peace, since our very survival hangs upon the decisions of the great nations, we once more put forward our appeal to them. Immeasurable quantities of money, not to talk of the futile waste of energy, brains, and productive capacity, and put into the manufacture and explosion of most lethal weapons of destruction that man has ever bent his ingenuity to devise. It is a fair comment on the state of Western civilization that this should be regarded as its highest pinnacle of achievement, while millions of the world's population in Asia and Africa, yes, even in Europe and America, exist on the fringe of bare subsistence. We call upon the powers who hold the fate of mankind in their hands to turn away from the production of these appalling means of mass destruction and to devote to peaceful use the harnessed power of the atom. How excellent it would be if, instead of preparing for the destruction of mankind, one barest part of the means financing it could be used in the rapid development of the less developed parts of the world, and thus destroy colonialist imperialism forever. It is a sad reflection on the leadership of these nations that they should have within their reach the power for doing good and yet refuse to adjust themselves to the opportunity for making effective their ability for doing good. I hope that before long, sanity may prevail and that mankind will receive the benefits of the uncountable world now being catapulted into the atmosphere. Long live African freedom fighters. Long live African independence. Long live your struggle. And long live African unity.
Concluded a speech given by Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, on June the 4th, 1962, speaking to a convention of African freedom fighters and gathering for purpose of mapping out strategies of future development for Africa on a number of levels, economic, political, social global. And it was a very powerful speech indeed, very, very clear. You know, my favorite word is clarity. You cannot argue that Nkrumah did not have clarity about the situation that was then developing in Africa, but he saw it also many, many, many decades down the road. The implications were already there. The catastrophes were already there of imperialism and capitalism. And this, he did not shirk away from it. He was very on point about what Africa needed to think about and to begin to plan for, or else succumb to what he called tribalism and fragmentation, which was one of the, these are the principal tools of the enemy, as he called it, that had successfully applied them for more than 500 years. Now, when you compare this speech to the vapid, plainly stupid pronouncement by Donald Trump about the assholes of the world, what we just got was an instruction of how these asshole countries were actually formed, what created them, what maintained them, and the underlying theories and philosophies, if you can elevate it to that level, what informed their murderous actions, which continue to today. Africa isn't poor, he said, though Africans are. It's the same with Haiti. Haiti isn't poor, but Haitians are. How did that come to be? It's because of what he identified early in the speech as the enemy, not an enemy or one of our enemies, but the enemy, he said, was imperialism. And under that heading, you have all these different methods of control of local resources, national resources, systematically depleting countries of the benefits of their own resources and enforcing that militarily as well. He mentioned in the speech, I hope your ears perked up, when he talked about the proliferation of militarism by the enemy in all throughout Africa. I'd like you to, this is a kind of speech that you have to go back to, you know, a couple of times, and find some time, if you can, to go back to this speech, which I encourage you also to share with people, because we're hearing here from the father of Pan-Africanism, and you see references to that throughout the speech. He's not talking about Africa, he's talking about the African world. His vision was for the African world, uniting against a common enemy of imperialism and colonialism, and as he said in the speech, new imperialism and colonialism, a ratcheted up version of domination and control. I hope this means a lot to you. I hope you gained a lot of insight from this particular speech. and that it would encourage you to take a more global view of what we talk about Black history. Black history is not just about Mississippi and Alabama. There's a Black world, far larger than the imperialist world. We've got to get to know it. And we have to pay attention to the instruction that we have been getting and had gotten over these many, many decades and centuries even, about the idea of consolidating our power, our culture, and our future. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk a bit more about this tomorrow. And I really, really do appreciate the fact that you were able to get over some of the little glitches and scratches and stuff that we heard. The most important thing was the powerful speech itself. Thanks again, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.